Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are, revealing who you are.
On today's program, we'll see how Elijah stood alone for the truth of God. Surrounded by false prophets, he trusted in the Lord's power to reveal what was real. Through his faith, we're reminded that God alone is true and faithful to his word.
We will come before you, Lord, in wonder, wonder. We will fall on our knees and surrender. We surrender to you.
And now here is part one of Cheryl's message titled, The God Who Is True.
Had Remy the other day. I think that's when I got this. Remy is two, and he loves to dance. He just loves to dance, and he's like, at two, it's like, where did you get those moves? And so my daughter has been sending me these videos of him. So I wanted to dance with him in person, right? So I'm like, what music? So I put 70s rock and roll. You know how you can do it on YouTube? I put that on, and you know we're dancing. I'm like, wait. This is saying highway to hell. I don't want to do this with my two-year-old. So I'm switching songs, and I'm like, we start dancing. I'm like, no, this isn't good either. And then I go, and it's like the Hotel California, and I'm like, no, I'm done. So then I'm like, is there any Christian rock and roll music? So I, you know, on YouTube, there's a site, it's Christian rock and roll. And so now we're dancing, and all of a sudden, I'm overcome by the reality of God. And his goodness, it's like the lyrics are penetrating me. You know, God is good. God is there. And I'm like, whoa, now I'm really dancing. And so is he. And it was just like, oh my goodness, Lord, I'm surrounded by lies. I am constantly surrounded by lies. I mean, you can't get in an elevator without hearing the lies of this world. You can't shop at a market. You can't go out to dinner. Do you ever wonder why they're always got music going every place you go? And you know, and you wonder why you have such weird thoughts? You know, it's because you've been listening to Elvis Presley while you waited to pay your electricity bill. It's just crazy. I think about all the pretense and all the lies. We read fiction. There's nothing wrong with fiction. I love a good story. But sometimes that gives us unreal expectations about how our life should go, and especially how our husband should behave, right? I mean, it dawns on us, you know, I did not marry Mr. Darcy. We watch fiction and movies, and we watch these series on TV, and we get so involved in the lives of people that are not real, right? I remember after my mom succumbed to dementia, I'm thinking about what's a safe program to watch with her on, you know, television. So I'm like, Perry Mason, right? It's black and white. I mean, if ever you don't feel like you're, you know, involved, I'll watch Perry Mason. So I put on Perry Mason. And my mom, so there's this person on the witness stand. And my mom jumps out of her chair. She's like, liar, you are lying. And I'm like, going, okay, Perry Mason's not safe. What can we watch now? But I was thinking about, you know, there's nothing wrong with that because we were born to love. We were created to love a good story. But sometimes we just get so wrapped up in it that we stop seeing reality from fiction. As long as you know it's fiction, you're great. But my mom used to always be harping about the evil of soap operas. Those of you who went to her Bible studies, you remember the evil of soap operas. And where they were taking the average housewife. So that's why my sister and I had to sneak to her house to watch Laura's Wedding to Luke on General Hospital. And most of you don't know what that is, but there are some of us that do. Then I was thinking about how the internet is so full of false information. You know, you go to find out, like, you know, what to do for the common cold, and somebody will say there's no remedy, and another one will say, you know, gargle with hydrogen peroxide. You're like, what in the world? And, you know, one of the things when you go to the doctor, they're like, do not read the internet. And you're like, but some of it's true. It's just so hard. Then we live with advertisements constantly, where products are always promising more than they can deliver just so they can get your money. You know, I have bought some things, I have to admit, on the internet that promised me youth. And my daughter, who's an esthetician, said, Mother, what are you doing with this machine? But he did lie to me. You know, but you there's so many scams. And, you know, my mother-in-law, somebody called her 2 years ago, and she said, hello? And he said, hi. And she said, Michael? He says, yeah, this is Michael. Anyway, he stole $5,000 from her. And my mother-in-law does not have $5,000. But lies, right? Lies. And need I mention politicians who say anything to get elected? In an environment of lies, it's so easy to lose sight of truth, or even to forget the truth. And we falsely assume, because of these lies, that God is on the defensive. You know, how many times are we trying to defend God?
He is real.
You know? But he's not on the defensive. This was the situation in Israel. Israel, if you remember, had succeeded or left Judah. They had broken, they had split over a dispute concerning the dynasty of David, which had to do with paying taxes, of course. And the king of Israel, whose name was Jeroboam, was concerned that the people of Israel would return to Judah and to the dynasty of David because the temple of God was in Jerusalem. So he built two temples, one in Bethel and one in Dan, to tell the people, God in Judah, the God of the temple, Yahweh, he's not your God. This calf, this golden calf, this is the one that brought you out of the wilderness, that delivered you from Egypt. And he accredited all the accomplishments of Yahweh with this calf. Now, after this, the kingdom of Israel suffered upset after Jeroboam died. His son was assassinated. His son's name was Nadab. He was killed by a man named Baasha. Baasha's son was killed by a man named Zimri. Zimri then committed suicide by burning the palace down on himself. And then Israel had the choice of two kings, one named Omri, the other Tibni. But Omri was a general, so he did the right thing and just killed Tibni and became king. And his son was Ahab. So now you understand a little bit about Ahab's background. And Ahab, if it wasn't bad enough to worship a calf and to credit him with all the great things that God had done, something even worse began to happen. And they began to turn back to the Canaanite god of Baal. Why? Because Ahab married a Phoenician princess named Jezebel. And she brought with her some prophets of Baal. And then Jezebel started an all-out assault, a murderous rampage against the prophets of God. She even had the prophets of Baal eating at her table. Imagine the estate of the average citizen in Israel. You know, because in our lesson this week, Elijah asked the people, you know, who will you serve? And they don't answer him. There's a reason for that. Their kings have told them that the God of their fathers isn't Yahweh, but a calf. And this worship is mixed with patriotism. In other words, if you worship Yahweh, then you're for Judah and not for the nation of Israel. That's how it had become. Though the title Israel is homage to Elohim, to the El, they had forgotten their God, especially since Jezebel is seeking to eradicate the memory of God completely from the land and minds and hearts of the people of Israel. The claims of Baal and his cohort, because Baal had a girlfriend named Asherah, was that they were the gods of fertility. You want rain? You need to pray to Baal. You want crops and prosperity on your land? You need to pray to Baal or to Asherah. You need to do your oblations. You need to do your sacrifices to Baal and Asherah. So who was Israel to believe? The God whose temple was all the way in Judah, their rival nation? The God whose prophets had been assassinated? Does that seem like a God that's powerful? When those who were preaching and serving him have died, the God who they only vaguely remember hearing of, the God of their fathers who are now dead and buried, who is Yahweh? And about this time, Elijah, or as they call him in Israel, Eliha, returns. I said that because I want you to notice that his name begins with God. God is Lord. Eliha. We have hallelujah. So he comes on the scene into this atmosphere, and he begins by a direct confrontation with Ahab, telling Ahab that the true God, the God El, the one who is the God of Israel, is going to withhold the rain from Israel for 3 years. This word not only proves true, but it exposes the utter powerlessness of Baal's false promise of rain and prosperity. It shows that Baal has lied in his promises, in his character, and his word, and in his reality. It is proving him to be inauthentic. And yet, 3 years of drought, and the people are still faltering. They're still wavering. Elijah is guided by God to hide for 3 years until the drought is about to end. And then he comes back to have an audience with Ahab. At this meeting, Elijah challenges the prophets of Baal to a duel with the God of Israel. He tells Ahab, invite all of Israel to Mount Carmel for a contest. Now, Mount Carmel is a range of mountains that overlooks the Megiddo Valley and also overlooks the Jezreel Valley. So if you're in the top of the range where they believe Mount Carmel, where this took place, is actually the highest mountain in this range, when you stand there, you can see the Mediterranean Ocean. It looks like, in fact, it's closer than Catalina is to us. And you can see it. So this is a vantage point from Mount Carmel where you can see all of Israel. Today you can stand there and you can see all the farms and you can see vineyards and you can see, on a clear day, you can see, you can definitely see Mount Tabor, but you can see Tel Aviv and Netanya and Caesarea on a clear day from Mount Carmel. So I think that this is purposeful, not only because Israel had worshiped there at one point, but because this is a good vantage point to see the land that was given to the people by God. Ahab and the prophets of Baal accept the challenge, and on a certain day, all Israel gathers. Now God's reputation is on the line. 450 prophets of Baal are present. The ground rules are simple. You know it. You read it. Each team has one bull that is to be cut in pieces. Each team is to place their bull on an altar. Neither team, I don't know why I say a team, because Elijah's alone on his team, but nevertheless, it worked. Neither team is to light a fire under their sacrifice. Then each team is to call out to their God, to either Baal or Yahweh. And the God who answers by fire, he is the true God. You see, this contest is not really between Baal and Elijah. It's between the false God, Baal, and Yahweh. It's not between the prophets versus prophet. I think too many times we make the contest between us and flesh and blood. This is God's contest. This is God showing himself to be above the false Canaanite gods. Before the contest commences, Elijah has one more challenge. He directs this challenge to the people of Israel, those who are faltering between two opinions. These are crucial. This is a crucial decision Israel must make. Because what you believe about your God, the God you believe in, what you believe, affects every aspect of your life. If you have a false concept, even of Yahweh, if you think he's a wrathful God, just waiting for you to mess up, you know what's going to happen? You're going to live in condemnation, and you're going to be self-righteous, and you're going to be judgmental. But if you believe that your God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, then you are going to be compassionate. Then you are going to grieve when you see people that are stuck in darkness. So what you believe about God affects every aspect of your life. It affects your emotional being, how you react, how you feel, your social wellness, who you associate with, and how you treat others. It affects your physical demeanor, how you deal with stress and the decisions of life. It affects your mental demeanor, your thought patterns, your stress levels. It affects your practice, what you do in life and what you don't do, and your priorities, what you invest in and what you don't invest in, where you spend the majority of your time. Any of you ever a little put off when your phone, your watch just says, you had, 30 hours on the internet, and you're like, no, I can't believe I spent that much time on my computer. What you invest in, where is the majority of your time? How long will you falter between two opinions? Elijah said, if the Lord is God, follow him. Duh. If Baal is God, follow him. I think that if we said that to other people, if your God's real, go for it. But if it's my God, Yahweh, that's real, listen to me. Follow the God that is true. Elijah gives Team Baal every advantage. Remember, he's alone. They are 450 in number. They have the first choice of the bull. They have the first time spot. They have the longest time allotment. And as we know, the prophets of Baal, they cut the bull into pieces. They lay the bull on the altar. And then they begin to pray, to cry out from morning all the way to noon. And we're told they were leaping about the altar. What a spectacle. What to see 450 men. And who knows? Maybe they thought, oh, our altar's not good enough. Let's make it a little more ornate. Baal is upset with our altar, and they're bouncing around and jumping up and down and gyrating, trying to get Baal to answer. But we read, there was no voice. No one answered. Not a voice, nothing. Then they became more frenzied as morning turned into noon, more anxious. In fact, we're told that they gashed themselves until they were bleeding profusely, as was their custom. Did anyone catch that phrase? Didn't that just like, whoa, this is how you serve your God? You gash yourself? You have a God that wants to see you hurt or be in pain? I know of some Christians who have that misguided idea that God likes to see them in pain. Nothing is further than the truth. Did anyone come to Jesus for healing and he said, no, I want you to stay in this pain. This is good for you. Paul said, Paul was different. God's grace was to be overarching in his life, and he had that thorn in the flesh to keep him humble. But I know people, I read of this woman, Madame Guyon, who really bothers me. Kathy loves her. But she put rocks in her shoes. Kathy Gilbert, just in case you're mixed up. She put rocks in her shoes so that every time she stepped, it would be painful. She would always build crosses because she wanted to be crucified like Jesus. And you're thinking, you know what? That's not godly. That's sadistic. Now, don't talk to Kathy. She has a whole different thing about it. But you'll notice Kathy does not have any rocks in her shoes. But you know, that's a misguided. These were the mystics. They didn't have the word of God. They were trying to serve God as best they could. And I get that. And that she did love God and she loved Jesus. But this is what I'm saying. Our God is not asking us to gash ourselves or to inflict harm. I know of monks in the first century that used to flagellate themselves because they thought that was pleasing God, to beat themselves. That's not our God. That's not our God. I think about the Sadducees in Mark chapter 11 when they come to Jesus and they say, Jesus, there was this man and he had this wife, and then he died, and so she married his brother, and he died, so she married his brother, 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 he died, so she married his brother. My dad used to always say, somebody should have checked the coffee. And then they said, okay, now, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? Because she had all seven brothers as a husband. You know, like, now we gotcha. We have this fictitious situation. What are you going to do? And the Lord looked at them. Jesus said, you're greatly mistaken. There are two things that you lack. One is you do not understand the scriptures. And two, you don't know the power of God. You see, we get mistaken often because we do not understand the scriptures. You know, we're not called to cut off our hands or to gouge out an eye just because we're falling to sin. But what Jesus is saying, he's speaking in hyperbole. He is saying we are to have such an aversion to sin that we are to be willing to do without, to not go certain places, not listen to certain things that would make us stumble. Because sin is a thief and a robber and a murderer. That's what Jesus is saying. You need to understand the scriptures. But with that understanding, you've got to bring the power of God. Our God is powerful. They gash themselves. Then Elijah seems to goad them. Cry louder. Maybe your God can't hear. Maybe your God is preoccupied, meditating, deep in thought, busy, on a journey, or sleeping. NLT says maybe he's using the restroom. Elijah is drawing the attention of the people to the utter folly, emptiness, irrationality of the worship of Baal. Look at this. Are you seeing this? Do you ever feel like saying that? Are you seeing this? My mom one time, I don't know why I'm on a case streak, but I am. My mom one time, I was in high school, and my mother and I would have fights about what was modest and what wasn't for me to wear, right? So we're in Savon's drugstore, and there's a man looking at Playboy magazine, older man, he's really awful looking, and he's going, So my mom brings me over and she's like, do you see that? Do you want a man doing that about you? Do you see that? And I'm like, no, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. Yeah. But my mom was famous for like, do you see that? And that's what Elijah is doing for the people. Do you see this? You really want this? These are the spiritual leaders of Baal. Do you want to leap? Do you want to gash? Do you see where this path is taking you? Do you see the end? Do you see this?
The story of Elijah reminds us that truth will always stand the test of time. God calls us to stand firm in His word, even when the world around us turns to compromise. When we rely on His strength, we can live with confidence, knowing that the Lord Himself is our truth and our defender. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll continue our study on the God who is true as we see how the Lord answers those who trust Him completely. We do hope you'll make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.